Union Corporation, Mr. Punkett.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew Plunkett and I'm here on behalf of Mark Hawkins, plaintiff appellant. To summarize our argument, even under the deferential, arbitrary, and capricious standard, the plan's three bases for denial of Mr. Hawkins' benefits were arbitrary. The plan's two stated reasons, we believe, can be dismissed outright. Its third reason also does not stand up to close.
What's our standard of review? I'm a little clear now.
De novo. Excuse me, Judge. It is arbitrary and capricious, and we're reviewing the court's summary judgment motion decision, which is reviewed de novo.
Yes, but the plan granted itself discretionary authority.
It did.
So the judicial review is
arbitrary and capricious.
Arbitrary and capricious, yeah.
Yes. Judge, with regards to the third reason stated by the plan for denial, that is based on the independent medical review of Dr. Chow, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it. It is undisputed that Dr. Chu, who was hired by the plan to review the medical records of Mr. Hawkins' physicians, it's undisputed that he reviewed only those records, that he spoke to Dr. Katz, who was Mr. Hawkins' treating physician, a rheumatologist. He did not see Mr. Hawkins.
Is Dr. Katz a board-certified rheumatologist?
I believe he is. That there was absolutely no issue taken with Dr. Katz's qualifications.
What makes you believe that he is?
Pardon?
What makes you believe that he is?
Judge,
Or that he isn't, or don't you know?
I thought I saw something in the documents. I can't point to them, but I thought I saw something in the record that he was board certified. But
let me ask you this. Didn't Liberty Mutual explain that it was rejecting Katz's opinion because of inconsistencies with Hawkins' description of his various activities?
Yes, it did.
And isn't that the big problem you have? Because that then affected, you know, Katz's credibility in terms of the plan.
Well, I'm not sure what they were pointing to, Judge. With regards to the inconsistencies between Hawkins' activities questionnaire and Dr. Katz's restrictions and limitations, I don't know that they were saying that there was something wrong with Dr. Katz's restrictions or limitations, because Dr. Chu, their independent medical reviewer, specifically says that he agrees with Dr. Katz's diagnosis and he agrees with the treatment that he's been receiving over the last several years. So I don't know, I'm not sure if they're saying that Hawkins is somehow fabricating or going outside of the limitations that Dr. Katz put him on.
I think they're trying to say that because, for example, Katz says he was unable to sit for more than 4 or 5 minutes without a break. But Hawkins talks about these computer classes he takes 4 times a week for 2.5 hours at a time, or how he spends an hour at night online. That's the kind of inconsistency I'm talking about.
I see. Judge, I think the key with those is that what you're talking about is a question of extent. Hawkins was required with this severe fibromyalgia to sit in his chair at his desk and input information on the computer and read documents, thousands of documents, and he was required to sit there between 8 and 12 hours. It's a question of, no matter what he does with fibromyalgia, if he's lying in bed for 24 hours or if he's walking, there's always muscular pain. And that what Hawkins was trying to do was follow his treater's advice, which is try to have some purpose and meaning in your life. Now that you're on short-term disability, try to do something that'll make yourself feel better about yourself.
But the problem is, this related to Judge Williams' question, he wants to be a web designer. But a web designer is someone who sits in front of a computer all the time. So how is that a response to his problem?
Well, I think
how's it different from the work he did until he?
I don't know that the record contains the exact answer to that question, Judge. I think that with all of these activities, what you're talking about...
By definition, the web is the web. You sit at a computer and play with it.
I guess, and I don't know if that means that you're typing for 12 hours if you're involved in web design.
Well, he doesn't type for his job, it's not obviously 12 hours a day of typing, right?
Well, it's either typing or reviewing documents. It's the...
Well, was he actually working 60 hours a week?
Yes.
Did you say that Dr. Chu confirmed Dr. Katz's findings?
He confirmed his diagnosis as well as he agreed with his treatment, which was pain medication, soft tissue injections.
But he didn't agree that he couldn't perform his job.
He disagreed with Dr. Katz's conclusion.
That he couldn't, and he felt that he could perform his job.
Yes, he did. And there is absolutely no contrary medical evidence from Dr. Katz. We don't know what that is based on, and that brings us to the treating physician rule, which is a common sense rule that says if you have a treating physician...
I don't understand. The problem with that is that a person's doctor is quite likely to support any kind of disability claim he has. I mean, it's just, you know, realism about doctor-patient relations.
Well, I would say there's less of a conflict of interest, Judge, with the patient physician than there is with the independent medical reviewer.
Why is it less? The doctor wants to help his patient, and the consultant wants to help whoever hired him. What's the difference?
Well, I'm not sure that the physician is being remunerated economically for a finding of disability as opposed to an independent medical reviewer who was hired by an administrator to review these.
Well,
and save the company
on a
money.
Contingent basis, right? He's not paid to find.
No, I understand, but certainly if there are helpful findings over the years, I would imagine that doctor is called on.
Doctors are helpful to their patients over the years. It helps their practice.
Yes.
So after Chu filed his report, Katz didn't file anything else, right? Any kind of supplement explaining that, you know, this behavior by Hawkins really didn't mean that he could perform 60 hours a week in his job. There was no supplement file.
There was none, and there was none asked for. And Hawkins would not have known to alert Dr. Katz to this independent medical review because it wasn't even listed in the denial letters. So there was no option there. But again, getting back to the treating physician rule, I believe that it is a commonsensical rule that says you have a treating physician who is familiar with this patient and has been for several years, has been treating him, has been diagnosing him, and that person should have greater deference than a person who comes in and just looks at the records and doesn't perform any separate clinical testing. Dr. Chu performed no separate clinical testing. And I also believe that with the treating physician rule, that it does not get in the way. It is not at odds with the Heitschu or Donato opinions, which the plan...
Even if there's a treating physician rule in Social Security cases, why should it be imposed on... why would a plan have to apply such a rule? This is just a contractual arrangement. In other words, a court might adopt it as a good rule, but a plan might say, well, we don't give any particular weight to the person's physician. And why would that be arbitrary and capricious?
Because it is putting technical procedure above what the goal is of the procedure. That is, what the plan is saying is, well, we hired...
You want to put procedure. You want to have a presumption in favor of treating physicians. So suppose some particular... plan says no. We don't want that. We don't agree with that presumption. And you're saying they're required by law to indulge the presumption?
No, I'm saying that upon review of the administrator's decision, that they should give greater deference to the treating
they
physician.
They is who? You mean us? You mean judges?
Well, originally the administrator.
But now you're saying the plan has to have the treating physician rule as part of its procedures, part of its, you know, evidentiary rules. But I thought you agreed. A plan could say, no, we don't accept that presumption. We're not going to defer to the treating physician. We want to have our own physician.
Well, I suppose if
is there anything wrong with that?
If it was in the plan itself, if it was part of the contract?
Well, it doesn't have to be in the plan. It just has to be in the way in which the plan is administered, because that isn't that implicit in an arbitrary and capricious review?
It seems to me, Judge, that the goal of these claims is to find out whether, in fact, someone is disabled.
Yes, but some people might think that giving deference to the treating physician is not the best way of finding out the truth. So why is that an arbitrary and capricious judgment? It could be a perfectly reasonable judgment.
Because I believe it's ignoring the medical evidence as opposed to just someone's opinion as to what as to their review of the medical evidence. I think that is arbitrary.
Well, and isn't another goal of the physician rule to encourage the decision maker to adequately explain, in some detail why they would reject or accept, mainly why they would reject the treating physician's opinion?
Absolutely.
Isn't that a goal?
Absolutely. It is. It certainly can be rebutted. They could, if there is substantial evidence, and if there's evidence in the record that the treating physician simply is, his opinion is not reliable, it's incorrect, then it can be overcome. But if you're just having a review without any clinical testing from your IMR, your independent medical review, with no separate clinical testing, and then you have a treating physician.
But, of course, this is extremely unrealistic as applied to this unusual disease of fibromyalgia, because COTS isn't doing any tests on this person. He's just on Hawkins. He's just repeating what Hawkins complains to him about. There are no tests for fibromyalgia.
True, Judge. You can't take a picture of pain.
Excuse me?
You cannot take a picture of pain.
There are no tests, is what I'm saying.
What they could have done is
What is Katz's dad that really to what Hawkins himself will tell?
Well, I would. A doctor has been seeing somebody for 5 or 6 years. They are experienced in seeing them time and time again and treating them and giving them soft tissue injections. I would think that they begin to learn what is affecting this person. Now, what the plan could have done is submitted him to a functional capacity evaluation. Sit him down at a desk for a day or two for 8 to 12 hours and see if he can...
Well, did you request that?
During the claim?
Yeah.
Mr. Hawkins did not.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Plunkett.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Hankage?
Good morning. My name is Tom Hanchu, and I represent the Appalee First Union Long-Term Disability Plan. The plan gives the First Union Benefits Committee discretionary authority to construe and interpret the plan and resolve questions arising thereunder. Therefore, there's a deferential, arbitrary, and capricious standard of review applicable, and there's no dispute about that. The district court's decision should be affirmed because the district court correctly concluded that the benefits committee acted reasonably in determining that Hawkins had failed to show that he was unable to perform the material duties of his occupation, and that determination is supported by substantial evidence.
Well, so what is your position? Is your position he doesn't have fibromyalgia or it's not serious or what?
The committee determined, based upon medical information, that he had fibromyalgia. He had been diagnosed with that in 1993. Dr. Cho's opinion, upon which the committee relied, he had no qualms about the treatment he was receiving. The dispute here is, notwithstanding that diagnosis, what could he do and what couldn't he do? And in that regard, it's critical, first of all, that Mr. Hawkins has successfully performed this job as Director of Fleet Management on a full-time basis since 1991. He was diagnosed with fibromyalgia in 1993, continued working full-time, successfully doing the job. 7 years later, in February of 2000, he abruptly stops working. There's no evidence in the record that, for example, he asked for any kind of accommodation, such as a reduction in his work schedule. The plan does provide for partial disability benefits.
You can know, people often force themselves to, you know, if they need the money or what have you, they force themselves to work beyond their actual capacity. Eventually, it's too much for them, and they have to quit. You don't want to penalize people for not quitting the first minute they have a disability.
Well, that's true, and that's not the only factor that the committee relied upon, but it is one factor combined with the fact that the medical records contain no evidence that his condition deteriorated in any way around that period of time.
Well, why wasn't he given a functional capacity test?
Why wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
There's no...
Particularly since your Dr. Chu didn't perform any tests on him whatsoever.
Right. The committee believed that that was not necessary because the information that Mr. Hawkins provided in response to the personal activity questionnaire in September of 2000 in connection with his application for LTD benefits explained what he was doing day to day. This wasn't the type of situation where the committee was looking at what the claimant was contending he could do and was suspecting that he was,
for example,
malingering.
What was his work schedule for First Union? How many hours a week did he work?
I don't know where the 12 hours a day came from. I don't believe there's any information in the record as to what his schedule was other than it was a full-time salaried position.
Is there anything in this record that shows that he was working 12 hours per day?
Not that I'm aware of. The record simply indicates he was working full-time. The record indicates he was working full-time, but as to what full-time consisted of, I don't believe there's anything specific in the record. The second factor that the Benefits Committee relied upon was the personal activities questionnaire that Mr. Hawkins completed in connection with his application for LTD benefits. And in that, he indicated he was, as the court noted earlier, attending school, taking three classes in e-commerce, internet, website design, and graphic arts. They met 4 days a week. He was, in addition to attending school, he was spending an hour or so each evening on the internet, corresponding by email and browsing news sites. In addition, he did his own laundry, shared cooking responsibilities with his roommate, and his hobbies included, quote, lots of reading. This is no different in substance. If he can do this, it was not unreasonable for the committee to conclude that he could do his job, which included reviewing documents and working on the computer. And the record indicates it's about a half and half, about half the day on the computer, about half the day reviewing documents.
Can you look at all the different things that he says he can do, looking at Chu's report, paragraph three? He doesn't give any indication that he can work full-time. I mean, he gives a lot of different things he's capable of doing, but there's no indication that he would be doing these things full-time or that these activities he could sustain 8 hours a day.
To do the job, the company, if he needed to take a break, say during the day, to take a nap, the ADA would require the company to make that accommodation. There's nothing in the record that indicated that these activities were time-sensitive, that they had to be completed by a particular point in any day. So there's no reason to believe that the classroom and other activities that he was engaging in, which appeared to take up a substantial part of the day, in addition to his work in the evenings, would be any different than what he could do at work.
Is your contention is that he wasn't disabled?
Our contention is that he had a medical condition, but that he was able to do the essential functions of his job, which was a desk job.
If you get any softer, only the angels can hear you.
Sorry.
But let me just ask you this. If you didn't feel he was disabled at all, why did he get short-term disability?
The principal reason, I believe, Your Honor, that the short-term disability benefits were paid is that the third-party administrator was still gathering the medical information, and as most employers do, when someone goes out on disability, they typically approve the benefits and begin paying them until there's evidence that the person's not entitled to it.
How long did that short term go on?
For 6 months, which corresponded with the receipt in September of 2000 with the personal activity questionnaire that Mr. Hawkins completed.
How come that you're a specialist and you're a board-certified internist and rheumatologist did not give him a physical examination? Isn't that usually done?
It is done sometimes.
No, my question was, isn't it usually done?
In my experience, no, Your Honor. Part of the reason, I believe, is that unless there's a reason to believe that the record information is insufficient, there's the intrusiveness of requiring a person to submit to the physical examination. In addition, there's nothing that the appellant indicated that might have been revealed by that actual physical examination that would have changed or could have affected Dr. Chu's opinion.
Dr. Chu's opinion is unsatisfactory in many ways, however. For example, he says the majority of individuals with fibromyalgia are able to work. That's irrelevant because, of course, Hawkins may be in the minority. And he doesn't say, he says, for example, he, meaning Hawkins, indicated he's able to do reading assignments, and he indicated he waits for a weekday when he is when he is feeling well to perform household chores. Well, if you're working full time, you can't wait for a day when you're feeling well to do your work. And he keeps saying there are no objective findings to support restrictions. Well, we understand that you've conceded that that Hawkins has fibromyalgia, and we know fibromyalgia doesn't permit objective findings in the sense of tests, you know, objective tests. So I don't really know what he's talking about here.
Well, with respect to the last point, Your Honor, fibromyalgia does not. There are no objective tests like a blood test to diagnose it. But in terms of what a person can and can't do, that is ascertainable by observing what, in fact, the person does.
Well, by what? I'm sorry?
By what the person actually does. If the person says he can do certain things.
Chu's saying, although Mr. Hawkins may report an increase in subjective pain complaints on a return to work, an inability to work not objectively supported in medical record. That seems completely illogical. I mean, you can't work at a demanding office job if you're in serious pain, right? How could a person do that? Is that your understanding?
Well, that's not my understanding of what the committee concluded he was able to do.
But it seems to have relied on this incoherent report of Dr. Chu.
Well, particularly when Dr. Chu, you know, he talks about all the restrictions and limitations were based on subjective pain, how Katz has tried various types of treatment with no success, how he's tried medications, tender joint injections, and other modalities of treatment, including physical therapy, how he just repeats and accepts Katz's outlining his medical history, that he has a history of chronic severe migraine headaches. And then he says he does not feel the extracurricular activities are contradictory to the restrictions and limitations provided in the record, that these restrictions are based on Hawkins' subjective pain and fatigue complaints, and he may still be able to do these extracurricular activities despite the illness. So that really doesn't I mean, if he's accepting that, that's not saying that he's capable of doing work full time. I mean, the way Chu sort of reads that is he can do these extracurricular activities, therefore he can work 60 hours a week or 40 hours a week or whatever.
Well, the claim here under the plan is that he could not work at all.
Right.
And if he could work even some, he would still be eligible for either the full or partial benefit. But he never made the claim
that... If he worked 5 hours a week, what would be the significance of that?
If under the terms of the plan, if he experiences, due to a necessary reduction in hours, a 20% or more loss in earnings, he would receive a partial disability benefit under the plan.
No, but you didn't answer my question. What if he can work 5 hours a week?
Mm-hmm.
What is his status under the plan?
He would receive full benefits unless the earnings were at least 20% of his prior earnings, then there would be an adjustment. He would receive benefits.
So in other words, if he can't work 20% of the time, he's considered fully disabled.
Right, if he can't work at least 20% of the time, right.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hanser.
Thank you.
Mr. Plunkett, do you have any more time? Well, we'll give you a minute if you have anything pressing.
In appendix page 37, the clinical psychologist of Mr. Hawkins, Peter Coe, references a work that he struggled for months on end to get up at 3 a.m. and work up to a 12-hour day. That's the first
document. Well, that doesn't mean at work, does it? Doesn't that mean doing housework or something? Do you mean that he was getting paid for working 12 hours a day?
I think he was a salaried employee.
You think, or he was?
I understand he was a salaried employee, and
For 12 hours a day.
Whether it was 8 or he worked an additional 3 each day, he was still getting paid the same.
But in pursuing Judge Coffey's question, the 12 hours refers to when he was working for the railroad. Or for First Union, not today. Is that what you're saying from your 12-hour day?
Correct.
It's a 12-hour work day.
Well, I'm assuming, and this is what I based my previous argument on, that he was working sometimes up to 12 hours, was on this report.
Right. So he wasn't on a 60-hour week, but because he was a salaried employee, sometimes he'd have to work even more than 8
Correct.
Hours. Some days he'd work.
Correct.
As one.
Correct.
Yeah, that kind of
also,
you said that was at page 37? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, the plan references in Dr. Chu's report a statement by Dr. Katz where Dr. Katz supposedly said, "I'm not sure why Mr. Hawkins stopped working in February of 2000. What the plan has left out of that quote is the following. He felt that Mr. Hawkins probably gave up with struggling with fibromyalgia for a long period of time, and he felt the complaints given by Mr. Hawkins have been consistent throughout the years. He feels that Mr. Hawkins is not fabricating, embellishing, or malingering his complaints." And that goes to the plan cites the Perlman case. The Perlman case also discusses sometimes with disabilities, you're able to go along a long time and keep working, but sometimes you give up the fight and you give up the struggle. So for them to point to, well, one, Dr. Katz said he didn't know why he stopped working, or two, we don't see any difference in the medical records. I mean, this is a progressive disease. At some point with progressive disease, you give up the fight, you give up the struggle.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both.
Thank you very much.
Next case for argument, Thomas